Well, we're back for another season of Sacred Music at the Cathedral, and the creator of the series, the mind behind it all, a musician himself, Tom Fielding, is here, and he's brought along the guest that will appear tonight on the series. So very nice to meet you, Tom. I see you again, Tom.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And to meet you, Tim Jansen.
Thanks.
Tim, you have traveled to Kalamazoo from Missouri, I understand.
Yes.
Yes. Would you tell our listeners what you do in St. Louis?
I'm the music director and organist at St. Anthony of Padua. It's a Roman Catholic church run by Franciscans. I'm also a composer in St. Louis, and I'm a concert pianist and a concert organist, and sometimes organize recitals, and sometimes, I'm also a off-the-record cake decorator. So
is that right?
Yeah.
You put down roots, it sounds like.
It's a little crazy.
And I will vouch for his cake decorating skills. He posts pictures on Facebook all the time, and they are just incredibly over the top and wonderful and really well done and quite spectacular. Yeah.
I would say that music director at any church is one of the most nonstop kind of jobs you could
True.
Ever have.
Yeah.
So is that sort of a relaxation for you?
A break away from the normal get-go. Yeah, pretty much so, yes.
Before St. Louis, did you study
New England
States?
Conservatory. And then
Boston.
Before that, we had a conservatory in St. Louis. CASA, it did have an upper division, a collegiate division. It was called St. Louis Conservatory and School for the Arts, and for some reason they got the word CASA Small House out of it. And it closed, sadly to say, in the late 80s, and that's when I went to NEC. But I was a piano major, but I'd always studied organ privately with really good people, world-class artists. Even when I came back from Boston, I would travel to Kansas City to study with a guy named John Ditto, who was teaching at UMKC at the time and at the conservatory.
I always think of organs as being really specific. They're very individual. And, of course, associated with great sanctuaries, great churches. Was that how you first experienced organ music?
I grew up in a church, a very small church that was by barracks that used to be the housed the theater for the guys in the army, and one of the stories is Judy Garland actually sang in my home parish.
She did.
Yeah, and that was the movie theater for the, and I think promoting one of her movies, she came out and sang for the guys at, so how many people get to say that? But the organ that I grew up was not a big fancy pipe organ, it was a Hammond B3. So my first love for organ was a Hammond B3.
Oh, wow, that's versatile, I
guess. Yeah, no kidding.
Tim Jansen is performing tonight at 7 o'clock in a free concert.
And it's Sacred Music at the Cathedral this year is not at the Cathedral. So
yeah, we
that's
buried
tonight
the
at
there.
First Methodist Church, 212 South Park Street, on the wonderful Le Tourneau organ there. The cathedral organ is secured in plastic tenting as we're getting ready to embark on a pretty extensive structural work and renovation of the front, the liturgical east end of the church. So that, for consistency, I didn't want to give up the opportunity of hosting, my colleagues and friends and so forth, and just of offering this kind of unique programming to the Kalamazoo community. So that's why we're just looking at other venues.
That's wonderful. So, Tom, you really did have to look for friends and partners around town, and of course instruments that enjoy listening to, playing on. So First United Methodist is one of those venues. that you identified.
Yeah, so let me just give you an overview of the season. So obviously tonight at 7 p.m. at First Methodist, Tim's going to play what's going to be just a meaty program of some really major works, which we can talk more about in a minute. On Friday, the 8th of November at 7 p.m., we'll have Jennifer Pasquale from St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City here to do a recital. And Jenny is just a peach. She's such a sweet girl, and she just plays the pants off the organ. So she'll be at First Methodist also. On Friday, the 21st of February, at 7 o'clock, a group from Notre Dame University, Our Lady's Consort, will come and do a choral concert. They're an all-student-run ensemble, so it's student leadership in addition to student singers. And they do a really, really nice job, as you might expect. The location of that concert is to be determined. They're going to do an all a cappella program, so my hope is that they can do that in the cathedral still, even with the work going on. The trick there will be if I can get the cathedral quiet on Friday afternoon for them to rehearse, or if there's going to be actual work going on. As you can imagine with a project like this, there'll be periods where things will be cut and banged on and so forth, but there'll also be periods where it's quiet while they're waiting for tiles to show up or whatever. So that location is to be determined. And then on Sunday, the 22nd of March at 5 p.m., we're going to do the Stabat Mater by Pergolesi, which is a very, very sort of a staple of the Passiontide repertoire.
Gorgeous piece.
And in that, you probably know Eric Strand. He's, you know, does a lot on with Early Music Michigan, all
yes,
that. So
he
he's going to allow us to use his harpsichord. So we'll put that in the front of the cathedral then with strings and the soloists. And I'll play some well-tempered clavier pieces to round out the program, and we'll do the Pergolesi. The soloist for that, the soprano, will be Mackenzie Schaefer, who is does a lot of professional singing and teaching around the area. And then the mezzo-soprano will be Antona Jost, who just finished a master's in opera at the University of Michigan. That's going to be a really exciting program.
Oh, that's the entire season.
That's the overview of the season.
Finishing on a beautiful, the Pergolesi. Tim's nodding. You're like, great piece. You have a website of your own, Tom, that you sometimes forward promote these events on. So maybe you could mention that.
www.thomasfielding.com, just my name spelled out, thomasfielding.com. And it's really geared toward my own performance. I have a link to our Sacred Music of the Cathedral page, which is a submenu of the cathedral page, which is
just Google Saint
Augustine. Yeah, right. I think, do I have it on the back here? I do. It's www.stakalamazoo.org, and there's a sacred music menu item with some following to the musical groups at the cathedral, but also the sacred music in the cathedral. And the season flyer is there. Information about the Sellner Fund, which is the series set of designated funds that funds the whole series, and that sort of thing.
Well, I hope you get some extra special grace over the next few months so that the building goes really well.
Right.
St. Ace comes back.
We are hoping and praying, that's for sure.
Well, if you just tuned in, my guests are Tom Fielding, who is the creator of the Sacred Music at the Cathedral series, and his first guest of the season, Timothy Jansen, who is music director and organist at St. Anthony of Padua in St. Louis, Missouri, a job that I'll talk to you about it a bit later, but I'd like to learn about the music for tonight. Music begins at 7 o'clock, and what is your program's inspiration? What do you want to communicate with listeners as an artist tonight?
Oh, good question. I designed the program around Franz Liszt, sort of, and in even more ways than I even realized in the very beginning. First, I was going to play a piece by Massillon on the program, and then I dumped it to play a short piece by Vidor. I thought the audience needed a little more clearing house after some really heavy works. But even Vidor, I was listening to a YouTube video about Vidor, I'm sorry, about Franz Liszt. And one of the greatest acclamations to Liszt's greatness as a pianist, of all of these great pianists who heard Liszt play, one of the ones that basically backs it all up is no other than Charles Marie Vidor. Apparently, Vidor got to play for Liszt, and Vidor was ecstatic to get to play for Liszt. And Vidor lived a really long life. Unlike Mozart, unlike Mendelssohn, Vidor lived a really long time. I think like 18, do you know that?
Yeah, 1844 to 1937.
That's so. A long, long...
He's part of actually several major eras.
Yes, you know? Exactly. And he got to meet Franz Liszt. And after he played for Franz Liszt, and Franz Liszt was very gracious and thought the playing was beautiful and loved the... I think he played one of his original compositions. He extended a wish to Vidor and say, well, you know, what can I do in return for this great pleasure? And Vidor's like, well, will you play the piano for me? And this is after Vidor, I'm sorry, this is after Liszt had sort of stopped concertizing. But he said, yes, we'll come by tomorrow. I practice and teach, blah, blah, blah. But and I'll play for you for about 5 or 10 minutes. Mm. So he did it, but Vidor got to hear part of the practice session, got to hear the 5 or 10 minutes, and Vidor said, out of all the experiences, many great musical experiences of his life, that short period of time was just beyond anything he could ever imagine. So I think
it's a great story.
Oh yes, and I didn't even realize. I mean, I was focusing on we're bringing everything to the Liszt, but I didn't even know by changing, I was actually bringing one of the biggest advocates that we have to not only the composition of Franz Liszt, but the his playing. One of my great teachers used to say, when people would say, and this is my favorite pianist. Performing, not only composition, but performing, Rachmaninoff. When people would come up to Rachmaninoff and say, boy, Rachmaninoff, you play more beautifully than we've ever heard the piano. He said, well, it's because you've never heard Anton Rubinstein. Oh. And then when people would come up to Anton Rubinstein way back when and say, oh, my goodness, Anton Rubinstein, you play so divinely. I can't imagine anything more glorious. Anton Rubinstein would say, that's because you never heard Franz Liszt.
Oh, yeah. He wouldn't return the favor to Rachmaninoff.
Neither one, right. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was kind of wondering.
I thought that was where it would go. And just in case it's confusing, I know there's probably a Rubinstein that might be more famous.
Oh,
Arthur
Rubinstein. Of course, that's such glorious old world play.
Right,
yeah.
But Anton was the one who remained in Russia.
Right. And the teacher to Tchaikovsky and all kinds of great things. Yeah. And wrote piano concertos. I actually got to play one years ago. And I always heard that they were dated. And I loved it. I thought it was a great, great, wonderful thing that needs to be out there. And I think I played, I can't remember, four. I wish I had a memory. Mm-hmm. But whatever one, there are others out there as well.
Well, so far I've learned you're playing a piece by
Franz Liszt.
Franz Liszt and Vidor on your program tonight starting
at
7.
It's a long way around. Okay, so I will start with Turnamere. Turnamere was a great improv. Are these improvisations that he heard that Durflay did? Are these?
Yeah.
The ones?
So this is he's opening with a setting of the Te Deum, a chant hymn that is sung at church dedications. It was in the course of the 19th century. It was sung at war victories. Because God was on our side and that sort of thing. And this was Turnamere when the phonograph first came out. Composers were scrambling to get to, now their legacy as performers could also be preserved, not just as composers. So we have recordings of Sassons playing his own works. So Turnamere recorded 5 improvisations. He was known especially for his improvisation skills. And they were recorded, they were improvisations, so they were not written down. They were recorded on phonograph rolls or whatever the technology was of the day. And then years later, Maurice Durufle, who was lived until what? I think
the
he 50s? Died in the
80s. Oh, is that long ago? The 80s? Mm.
60s, well,
let's
70s,
stick to things
80s.
We know, Kara. So yeah. Anyway, a couple generations after Tournemer took these recording roles and transcribed the improvisation. So we have these five improvisations that Tournemer did that he never actually intended to be written down that right. were then transcribed and played. They get played fairly frequently.
That's
There's two
wonderful.
Of them that are particularly popular.
I mean, just knowing that they were spur-of-the-moment pieces, and then, but you have to learn them note by note
no,
from
by
a
note.
Page.
Yes. Right.
Do you then sort of reincorporate this idea of
improvisation?
Yeah.
Yes. I think that's when they work best, is you have to give them breath and life and do all kinds of things that go a little bit beyond the score, because you want to, and we, you know, we as organists learn to improvise. The pianists are finally starting to catch up. Years ago, all the great pianists knew how to improvise, and that sort of went into the jazz idiom, but it kind of faded for piano. Even the Mozart piano concertos, there's always a place for in the first movement for the pianist to improvise. Most pianists would play Schnabel or Beethoven or other great, you know,
cadenzas. Yeah.
Right, cadenzas. Yeah. But we're trying to slowly bring that back, to bring new life and breath to music, so that it's not just us organists and jazz musicians, that improvisation sort of, matter of fact, I shouldn't say this, but one of the compositions I'd like to write, a piano concerto or an organ concerto, where the entire score is written out, but I only give suggestions to the soloists, where the soloists literally have to come up with their own ideas.
Oh, my.
Yeah, really
what
cool.
What an interesting idea.
Yeah, really cool. Well, I'm sure someone else has done it before, and I'll probably get, you know, oh, well, you weren't the first. But, but or someone's going to steal it on the other side of the radio, which is great. Make sure it's good.
I don't think there anyone, you know, there's only one Tim Jansen.
Oh, well,
so,
yeah.
This is
someone crazy enough to think about it.
so you're... the next on the program.
Yes, it's J.S. Bach, and this is where we get funny and controversial. I'm playing a really light chorale, Liebster Jesu. It's everyone's, a lot of people's favorite. It's a light, I was going to do another chorale, but we just changed it so that I could easily go into the famous St. Anne, and I'm going to ask the congregation to sing along. And then I'm going to go into the famous E-flat fugue, which is, all the scholars say, has nothing to do with the St. Anne, but the first phrase is basically is the fugue. So even though Tom can...
He's talking about the St. Anne hymn tune, O God, Our Help in Ages
Past.
Yeah. So there's just this remarkable similarity between the fugue subject of the fugue in E-flat and this hymn tune, although... Like you said, most scholars agree that you know, this was not really based on. In the 19th century, that romantic imagination put a lot of these nicknames to Bach fugues.
Right.
And so that's where they started. You got, for example, the wedge fugue, because the fugue subject is an expanding chromatic passage in both directions. So if you think of it graphically, it sort of makes the shape of a wedge. These kinds of things. Well, the romantic imagination decided, well, this fugue subject sounds like this hymn tune, so let's just call it that. But it really isn't.
No, it's not, but it works.
Oh, my goodness. I have such a good time listening to Tim and Tom, organists, just... are the
Making
most
up
fascinating
their own world.
People. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. So let's remind
it's
listeners.
It's a little subculture, isn't it?
It's free and open to the public. Music's at Saint. Music's tonight.
First United Methodist Church.
What is the style of organ they have there? Is it a French one?
It leans in the French. It was built by the Canadian firm Le Tourneau. I believe the instrument went in the early 2000s. There was a whole series of instruments that went in Kalamazoo. The Saint Augustine organ went in at that time, First Baptist, St. Luke's Dobson organ. So this is a large, eclectic, three-manual organ with leanings towards the French Romantic side. It'll play the Tournemer and the Vidor wonderfully. The Liszt will sound great. I mean, actually, everything will sound great on it. So it's a really, really, the program was very well chosen for this instrument.
And Tim, of course, you don't like a pianist show up 4 hours ahead of your concert to warm up. As an organist, there's a lot of work to be done prior to taking the stage.
Oh, sure. You have to find out the life of the instrument. You have to find out what registrations work really well. It doesn't always work instrument to instrument. You kind of have to find out the individual personality of the instrument, and then you go from there, and then you basically select your stops for the piece. Every instrument is different. The instrument that I play on has 10 generals. This one only had 8, so I thought I'll make this really easy. I'll just use the same. Well, I had to sort of work around that.
So you spent some time with it yesterday?
Oh, yeah.
He's talking about the pistons that, you know, you record different stop combinations and you push the button and it comes back. So he has more in St. Louis than are here. So it just takes some adjustments.
But I don't have more memory levels. I only have one memory level there. And can you explain that?
You're talking about like presets?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The presets. Yeah. So you have, you know, eight of these combinations. And then by memory levels, you click a button. Then you have it's switched up to level 2 and you have the same 8, but you can set different things on them. So it's a way of allowing the organist to control the sounds and the dynamics of the instrument. Gives them a little more control over it.
Quickly. Yeah. Because of course this is all during a live performance.
This is all during the music, yeah. And of course the orchestration of the work is part of the music also. It's just, you know, we have to go about it a little bit different way than you do when you have 70 people in an orchestra playing.
Well, we've talked about Liszt, Vidor, Tournemire, and Bach. And now what happens?
Oh, well, we're on the fugue subject. And this is actually what I called this program in St. Louis, Mirrored Images. We go from 3 fugues in the Bach, the St. Anne, which is Trinity prelude and fugue. And it has the fugue has 3 subjects. Then we go to a really quiet piece by Vidor, which is a beautiful slow movement from the 4th Symphony. And I thought it was a very popular piece. Some of my organ friends say yes, some of my organ friends say no. And then we go to the great. This was another connection to Franz Liszt. We go to Julius Röpke, and Röpke was a student of Franz Liszt. Liszt was very impressed with this young man. Unfortunately, like Mozart, like Mendelssohn, he didn't live very long. 24 or 25.
24, yep.
Yeah, 24 or 25. Died. And Liszt wrote a beautiful, beautiful letter to the family mourning the talent and what a loss and how he would remember this young man for the rest of his life. Anyway, that's a double fugue. So we go from 3 fugues to 2 fugues, and I'm just playing. I'm not playing the whole Röpke psalm. I'm just playing the fugues.
So Röpke's output was very small, of course, because of his short life. But his major organ work that is sort of a war horse, sort of a coming of age project for organists, if you will, is a sonata based on the 94th Psalm. So he took the text of the psalm, which is very turbulent, you know, cries to God and all this sort of thing, and wrote this musical sonata that is an interpretation of this text. So Tim's playing just the final fugue from that today. Yeah.
And as he said, it's a tone poem. And guess who the inventor of the tone poem was? Franz Liszt.
Yes.
So we get back. Liszt wrote so much. I was just at a music store the other day, and there's a famous, I can't remember the name of the publisher, but famous German publisher that has all the works of Liszt in, I think, 18 or 19 volumes. And I thought I would go through all of them. There is so much. By 80% of the stuff, I don't even know. And I know a lot of Franz Liszt piano music. But, you know, the Hungarian Rhapsody, I didn't even get to the Hungarian Rhapsodies. I didn't even see the book with the Liszt Sonata. I did see the book with the Years of Pilgrimage. I did see the book with the Consolations. But there's so much more. There's just so much. There's transcription after transcription and all kinds of things that the man did. And technical exercises, which are just brilliant. And this isn't back in the day. This isn't writing now, where we have the aid of the computer. This is sitting down and, you know, writing each note out. So his output, and this was just the piano music, he wrote a huge amount of choral music, a huge amount of, he wrote an entire opera, you know, we don't even know some of his music isn't even published. It's
mind-boggling.
Yeah, really.
He wrote a very nice mass, I think.
Beautiful mass. Yeah. Beautiful, huge Berlioz type. Yeah, that's monstrous, and it's almost like Berlioz meets Wagner meets, you know, Liszt. It's a huge work. I couldn't believe it when I heard it.
Tim, will you talk to the audience at all tonight?
Yes, I am. Good. I asked for a microphone, so I'm gonna try to make some conversation without going on too long. then we go to the famous. There's a short intermission, and then we're going to the famous piece by Liszt, which is his Prelude and Fugue on Adnos. The Adnos is a chorale that happens in a beautiful opera that doesn't get performed very much anymore, called The Prophet by
Meyerbeer. Yeah.
Meyerbeer. I listened to some of it is on YouTube, and a friend of mine had a recording of it. And it's a very interesting work, and I can see why Liszt was, I don't want to use the word obsessed, but I will, very intrigued by the word, by the work. And, the more I study the work, it really is good versus bad, and in a really powerful, intense way, and that really comes forthright in this work. I saw a movie. I probably shouldn't mention the movie not too long ago, but it was basically a fight to the death sort of movie, and I thought, oh, I understand this work a little better. It really is. It's you know, they say and there is nothing specific about the B minor sonata, which is one of the pinnacle works for piano.
Yes.
They say that there is tone poem in that, but that was never officially talked about. Sort of like, you know, we were talking about the Saint Anne. Maybe this could be romanticized, but the good versus evil.
I'll just jump in here. Of course, you know, Franz Liszt was a priest. He was ordained a priest in his later life after years of concertizing and womanizing and all these sorts of things. And
Franciscan,
you find this
too, wasn't it?
I don't remember. But there is you find, especially in some of the later works, there is quite a bit of moralizing, or at least you know, sort of the drama of these sorts of moral issues that come out. So you think of, for example, the Faust Symphony, the Dante Symphony. Which are based on, obviously,
on your soul going to heaven or hell.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So there is this, you know, this preoccupation with these kinds of moral questions.
This piece is no different.
The stakes are high.
Yeah, big. Yeah, and it's exactly. And he brings that out really big in this piece. I think he brings it out really big in the B minor sonata, but I think it's really obvious in this piece.
You know, I'm trying to think.
It's my job to make it really obvious.
I'm trying to think of whether Liszt would deliver a happy or a tragic ending, and I can't guess with him. It could go either way.
Right. In the B minor sonata, we think it's a really happy ending. We think we're seeing the light. And we're the resurrection, and after the long life, we're finally there. But then he does a weird thing after these beautiful three B major chords just softly resound in the piano, and we could easily end right there. But then he does the sinister low B at the very end, just to sort of like remind us that there's still something.
Yeah. Lurking.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Wow. Well, I'm with Tim Jansen, who will perform at 7 o'clock tonight. It's a free concert. A goodwill offering will be received after.
Correct. We'll have a free will exit offering. And
yay.
And very important to specify the place again.
First United Methodist Church. Organ recital by Timothy Jansen, 7 o'clock.
Right.
Free to the public. It's going to be really going to be a kind of a monster of a program. It's going to be wonderful.
That sounds just spectacular. We have time to hear a recording, Tim. I'd like to share some of your playing with listeners.
This was recorded in Grand Rapids at LaGrave Church. It's from a suite by Duraflay that we were talking about earlier.
Who took the Tour and Amir improvisations off of the record.
Right.
He was the one who transcribed.
And wrote them out for everyone.
Yeah, that was Duraflay. I love Duraflay. I never got to hear him play. Many people around me did, and his wife as well.
The other thing I know about Duraflay is he threw out
he was very self-critical, like several of his contemporaries. Henri Millet was the same way, you know. And it came to mind, we were talking about his death date. I do remember in the 70s he and his wife, who Marie Madeleine, who was also an exquisite organist, were in a car wreck, car crash, and Maurice never really recovered from that. And I believe he died in the early 80s. She went on a little longer, but the car crash was really debilitating for both of them.
Okay, back to this piece that he did publish. And
This is the suite Opus 5. He was never happy with this piece, which is kind of and matter of fact, it was told by students that he would never allow students to play it, especially at the Toccata, and that's what we're going to listen to. This was recorded at LaGrave in Grand Rapids on their, I think it's an Austin instrument, 80 rank Austin instrument, and I think it works rather well on this instrument.
What is the feeling of this part of the suite?
This is turmoil, I think, turmoil and a little bit of anxiety. I think it's also looking towards a little bit of a struggle too. But I think we end on a good note. So
let's hear it. I'm with Tim Jansen and Tom Fielding, and Sacred Music at the Cathedral continues tonight at 7 at First United Methodist Church. What a high wire act. That's a live performance by my guest, organist Tim Jansen, who will be performing, at 7 o'clock tonight in the Methodist Church.
First United Methodist Church.
Thank you, Tom.
Yes.
I'm really overwhelmed.
I know it's just so funny because I called the series Sacred Music at the Cathedral, and we're not at the Cathedral this year.
The piece we heard was by Duraflay. The only other Duraflay pieces, I'll admit, is the Requiem that I know.
Absolutely. It's his most famous and mainstream piece.
That did not prepare me for this incredible dynamic piece that you just put. You are a masterful organist, and the passion is there, too. Pulling us all along. Amazing.
That's what it's all about.
Duraflay is part of the program tonight?
Duraflay is only through Turnamir.
It's through Turnamir.
The transcriber of the improvisations.
But there's Bach There's the Tournemure, there's Liszt, there's Vidor.
Right. And there's...
the Roypka.
And the Roypka. The two major works would probably be the Fugue from the Roypka Psalm and then the Ad Nos by Liszt, which is another monster work for the organ. Matter of fact, the Roypka Psalm has its own wiki page, so that tells you what some great scholars really think about the piece. It's considered one of the really great masterworks for the instrument.
Roypka is another composer I don't know very well at all.
Well, if you would have lived another 20 years, you would have.
Yeah, he'd be much more famous.
Yeah, of course.
So I earlier said I wanted to ask you about your job as music director.
At St. Anthony's.
At St. Anthony's in St. Louis.
It's basically the Sunday liturgies that I prepare. I'm a basic music director, take care of weddings, funerals, the choir. We have three choirs at St. Anthony's. We have an Eritrean choir, we have a Hispanic choir, and we have an English choir. But the English choir is the main stable, and I basically direct them. And we sing anything from Howells to Palestrina to William Byrd to Morten Laudensen to all kinds of other things. It's almost like a mini little choral society. I only have 10 people, but they're all dedicated and they all love it. Mm-hmm. And they'd be very happy that I'm talking about them right now.
How large is the congregation?
The congregation, well, the space is a huge cathedral.
Oh.
It probably seats around 1,200. It's high ceilings, 50 rank pipe organ. We have a Steinway piano in the front that we use. I'm supposed to use once a month, but it's so hard to get away from the organ. And my choir's already situated upstairs, and when we sing downstairs, we have to put everything together, and it takes forever. But anyway, I digress. It's a very large space. And it's fun to play, and Tom will get to experience it in May. He's coming to play for us in May, and I probably can't talk him into the Mule, but he'll be bringing other great things. Can you play one thing can you play the Two Ace Fretcher for us?
Sure, I can do that.
Awesome.
Okay.
Great. Nothing like talking someone into something on the radio.
I mean, am I really going to say no on live radio?
You said yes. You said an Eritrean and an Hispanic choir that's at St. Anthony's. Are those language choirs? You're singing in Spanish or
They're folks that have migrated to the United States. Is that the right word? And they're living very close to the Eritrean group had a very close relationship with Franciscans. Our parish is run by Franciscans. So we're not just a parish, we're also a friary. So, I always have to check with the Franciscans for my practice schedule because, there are things that, they have prayer and morning prayer and afternoon prayer, and we have adoration on certain days. And so I always have to work around that with my own personal practice schedule. It's great. And we also have a food pantry and outreach. And it's a very, very, it's a small congregation, but very active and very loving and caring. And I know this is going to sound strange, but one of my choir members just lost her keys. Lost her cell phone right before choir. And one of my other choir members took it upon herself to call the restaurant after the choir rehearsal was over with, because other people had already called the restaurant that she said it was at the restaurant. But they said, well, one of my other choir members took it upon herself to call the restaurant an hour after. And it turned out that the restaurant had found the cell phone. So yeah, it was, I don't know why I was so touched by that, but I was just so touched by the outreach of the group and the loving caringness that they have for each other. It's they sing beautifully together. I think more because they love each other other than their music director gives them good guidance. So I don't know, it doesn't do much good for me, but anyway.
A consequence of making music together is you end up looking out for each other in a lot of different ways. Yeah. As both of you know, Tom also being a music director. It must be fun when your guests come to town and you catch up and, you know, you can really relate to each other on a lot of levels. Well, we are near the end of the hour, and I'd love to finish with another piece of music that you brought along. If you'd suggest one, maybe Bach or...
There's a really short piece by Herford, or there's a... Do we have time for the Allegro to the Sixth Symphony, Vidor?
Well, she can always fade it out. So why don't we
Let's do the Vidor. It's on the what track is it though?
I'll figure it out.
Okay,
I'll
cool.
But make sure that our listeners know.
Okay.
The concert is tonight at First United Methodist Church.
7 p.m.
Right. 7 o'clock.
Free admission. Exit offering. Very exciting program.
Just walk right in. Timothy Jansen is the soloist, and he'll give us an intro and explain his thoughts about some of the pieces.
And, and the congregation gets to sing along once, so that's...
Well, it's been great visiting with you, Tom, as always, and Tim, great meeting you.
Thanks.
And
thank you so much.
Enjoy your concert tonight.